This is an ABC podcast.
Resorts, homes and a newly built hospital have been washed away.
I'm just holding on for dear life here. This isn't fun.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Save what for dream. You must ready.
Helping your community.
Helping your family.
Helping you.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Mula, I'm Josiah Nanunga, based in Fiji.
Hi, I'm Fred Hooper, based in Australia, and this is Pacific Prepared.
It's a show all about natural disasters, climate change, and traditional knowledge, and how these things are all connected. And you'll hear that through stories from right across the Pacific.
Each week we work with local reporters. They're on the ground letting us all know what's happening in this space and what people want to hear about. And Joe, this week currently you're in Kiribati.
Yes, I'm currently in Tarawa, Kiribati. Maori from Kiribati. That's hello in Kiribati. And it's really interesting looking at the geographical setup of the island, the atolls. One side lagoon, one side ocean, and Fred, it's really hot. 35, 36, 37 degrees Celsius, I tell you. It's way hotter than Fiji.
I can see that you're feeling the heat over there. I can see it.
Yes, yes. And I'll be telling you more in details over the next few minutes.
Yeah, exactly. On today's show, flooding in Fiji, what that looks like on the ground, and how it affects different sectors, such as farming.
Also, helping everyone to define their role during a natural disaster. We'll head to Tonga for that story.
And also the far reach of climate change on top of things that we can see on the news like cyclones, flooding and storms. Climate change can impact communities in so many different ways. That's all coming up. This is Pacific Prepared.
I'm just holding on for dear life here.
For women, it's always safety first. They are the first responder.
You're listening to Pacific Prepared.
Joe, as we mentioned, you're currently in Kiribati, and I can see that you're struggling with the heat a little bit, which is unusual for you, but what are you doing over there at the moment?
The heat here, I tell you, Fred, it's another level. You know, when I first arrived last Friday, when I arrived on Thursday last week, it took me at least 1.5 days to really adjust to the weather, the food and the surrounding. And now I can say I'm a local.
You're okay.
And
you're a local.
By the way,
wow.
I'm here under the Pacific Community SPC, under the Pacific European Union Marine Partnership Program mission, or PUMP mission in short, just to come and, collect the outcomes or the impact stories, because Kiribati is one of the countries in the Pacific where our activities, our projects have been implemented over the past few years by our key result areas, or our KRA partners who are implementing the work. So it's really interesting, you know, meeting the people and getting to taste their food. The mode of transportation, communication is really interesting. You know, there's no taxi or car to hire. You just have to hire a motorbike. It's unique. It's unique, I'm telling you.
Wow, okay, really, great.
You should visit Kiribati one day.
We want to get some sounds of Joe on the motorbike next week, maybe. Joe, you must have visited a lot of countries around the Pacific. How does Kiribati compare to other countries, if that's fair to compare them as well, other countries in terms of like what their risk levels are like in terms of climate change, I suppose.
Well, I'm seeing that from my observation so far over the past few days, I can clearly see the impact of climate change, especially rising tides, coastal flooding. If relocation is a solution to their problem, then that would not be applicable for them because eventually, Kiribati, the highest altitude is 3 meters. That's all. That's it. They have no higher ground or at least a mountain or a hill there to relocate to. Otherwise, they have to be relocated to another country. That's the only solution. And how it also affected water security?
Yeah, it's really difficult to comprehend how low that Kiribati is, how close to sea level it is. I think you said 3 meters, which is unbelievable, yeah. Incredible.
3 meters, yeah, imagine.
In just a second, Joe, we'll chat more about Fiji and the flooding that's been happening there. You've been doing some work on that, so we'll find out in just a moment.
We need to be prepared for the future.
Helping you stay safe.
We have built a seawall 2 times, but it did no good.
What happens when something goes wrong and how do they respond to it?
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
We might have seen recently in the news there's been some flooding happening in Fiji. Joe, what's been happening on the ground where, you know, in Fiji where you're based at the moment?
Oh, yes, Fred, even though I'm on the other part of the region, but I was glued to my phone and my laptop over the past few days, browsing through or getting myself abreast or stay updated with the news and updates, especially the flooding or the heavy rain updates from Fiji. And, you know, it was really an eyesore to see another phase of massive flooding in most parts of the country. This is particularly in the Western Division, mainly Nandi, Lotoka, Mba, Tabua, and Rakiraki. A few parts of the Central and Eastern Division, particularly Obalau, the old capital of Fiji, Lebuka Town, and the northern part of Fiji, Lambasa. We've been there. We've been to Lambasa.
So it's covering a huge area then, far out.
Yeah.
Obviously, the rain affects everybody, but we want to look at one sort of sector today, Joe. What about the agriculture sector? How has that been impacted by flooding this time?
Yes, absolutely, Fred. That's one of the sectors in Fiji that was badly affected over the past few days by those by the widespread flooding in most part of the country, especially the Western Division, particularly in Singatoke and Rakiraki. And these areas are, you know, they usually feed the markets in Fiji and perhaps a few markets abroad.
And what sort of crops are we, sorry to interrupt, what sort of crops are we talking about, Joe?
Cassava, taro. Cassava, taro, fruits, mainly pawpaw. These are most the main crops and fruits that, you know, would be lost its productivity, or I would say, like,
impacted, I suppose.
No longer fit for consumption.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ruined, I guess, for want of a better word.
Imagine the weeks, the months of, you know, cultivating tilling the land.
Yeah, exactly.
Planting those cassavas, the sweat.
Yeah, a lot of work down the drain, unfortunately.
All gone down the drain, yeah. And I spoke with, I interviewed Miss Sunila Wati, a 60-year-old woman who has been a market vendor in Rakiraki market over the past 20 years.
My name is Sunila Wati. I'm staying in Galau, Rakiraki. My area is very floody area all the time, like flood on the road. And I'm a market vendor about 20 years. And I'm selling here like root crops, like vegetables, fruits and vegetables. That's
right. Rakiraki, in times of heavy rain, would normally get flooded. The shops, even the municipal market. How has that issue, you know, affected the market vendors, both who lives here within the Rakiraki area and those from the village?
Yeah, the village area too. They have a flood area, the road, no, the soil all come on the road, and the Galau, all flood area, and the Nongoro, and the Koratale have a big rivers and what area? Yeah, then they have we have family, no, school too. The kids not going to school that time, flooding, and the festival not coming. We are all lost in that, everything in that.
Would you say, you know, an estimated or roughly how much would these commercial vendors, commercial farmers lose, you know, at one flooding incident?
Oh, yes. This is much lose. We know we just lost in that. Because every time we just buying here, it's a low price or high price. Eh? Then the farmers, they have no chance to bring here. Eh? They have root crops or whatever, the vegetables, they went bad. Eh? When they prepared afternoon time, Then they want to come in the morning. That time we have a flood. Then they already they have lost it. And us going too, we just put it on the table. Then not people coming, then we are lost in that. That's we have lost too much here because like in a week we just buying 200 or 300 like vegetables, all this stuff. Eh? But now we cannot buy that because it's flooding. Take that thing. Eh? It's now we just buying now, mother. We're buying $3 a bundle. Because it's very hard for us and buyers, eh? The kids, they are going to school, they have foods prepared and everything, but it's very expensive. But now people have no money here. Then how can they buy? That's the problem we have in flood time. We are creating this thing.
So what do you think should be done to help market vendors in Rakiraki?
What I say, but I think so. The government help us, like flood area. They can help to flood area, make a high pool or something like. Then we can, they can support us. I just think government will be support us.
Lastly, your words of advice, words of encouragement to other market vendors, not only in Rakiraki, but in other flood-prone areas that are facing this issue on the need to be, you know, resilient, eh?
I know, because in Rakiraki only not, eh, only flooding. Because Tawa, Ba, all, this is all flood area. So, as again, only we have farmers, they have too much damage in this time flood area. Market, we have no damage inside. Only we have damage with the vegetables and whatever we have on the table. That's why you just take that crates.
That was Miss Sunila Wati, a 60-year-old market vendor who has been doing this job over the past 20 years at the Rakiraki Market in Boilaka.
Thanks so much, Joe. You're listening to Pacific Prepared.
What's your plan? Are you ready to leave your home? Plan now before disaster strikes. Pacific Prepared.
Just imagine for a moment that when a disaster hits, what is actually happening on the ground? So there's probably people everywhere. There's a little bit of panic. People aren't really sure what to do. And you're thinking about what you need to do as well. Joe, what does it look like on the ground during a disaster? Do people have sort of specific, really specific roles, I guess, within families of what they need to do during and after disasters?
It depends on a disaster. For example, some disasters are predictable. And we can really get updates or warnings from before the disaster actually strikes. But for some, it happens without any signs or warnings from relevant authorities.
And is it like, you know, within a family too, are there roles that, okay, look, the younger brother, you need to go and do this. You need to go and round up all of your siblings, for example, and you look after them and then, you know, there's another job for mum and dad. They're doing this. Is that sort of like that, or is it not? Is it sort of more informal?
It's like a delegation of duties. Yeah, that's the idea, or the different duties that you've just outlined. It's more prevalent in traditional settings in villages, for example. You know, when there's a during a flooding event, during any flooding event, the head of the family or whoever, his elders within the family, will start to, you know, give advice to people, to the family members, to members within that particular household. So your job is to fill up the water in those tanks. Your job is to take those animals or our livestock to higher ground. Eh? So whoever is working can be, you know, can be advised or can be asked to stock up all the rations, the food items, all the necessary items for the family. So yeah, it still happens today in Fiji, especially in villages.
Recently in Tonga, they've had some training over there. They've been talking about the roles of particularly women during and after natural disasters in Tonga. Tonga Broadcasting Commission journalist Anasiu Falakono has this story.
The National Disaster Risk Management Office, in collaboration with the United Nations Institute Training and Research, are hosting a workshop for women's leadership in tsunami-based disaster risk reduction for tsunami in Tonga. Speaking at the program, the CEO of the Ministry of MEDEC, Sione Akauola, says the training is focused on empowering women in Tonga to be more prepared in times of natural disasters, especially tsunamis.
Today is also a coincidence of hosting this very important workshop focusing on you women. And also this week here in Tonga, the government, the country as a whole, are acknowledging the importance of women, of how we live in our family, in our society, and even in the country. I believe there are a few challenges that you may share from your individual countries on when women try to be heard, even in their family, even in their society, and even in the level of decision making.
In Tonga, women play pivotal roles at home and in the community, and Luisa Taonga of the National Disaster Risk Management Office says the training is to empower women in Tonga to know more about preparedness and to empower them during natural disasters.
This is quite an important training because it helps empower women, not only as leaders in their own ministries and their workplace, but leaders in their families, in their communities. And as we're seeing Tonga's vulnerability in terms of its geographical location, we also see that women are also part of the most vulnerable groups in times of disasters. And this training seeks to empower them in order to make sound decisions in preparedness, not just for responding, but preparing well ahead before an actual disaster, in this case a tsunami, occurs. That in turn, we're hoping that at the end of the day, the training will also, the knowledge and the skills that they will be obtaining from this important training will not only support their families, but support the workplace, but also trigger into the community as well in order to prepare for sudden onset disasters like tsunamis.
Meanwhile, Savelina Faoliu of the Tonga Geological Services says the workshop is essential for women in Tonga, as most of the times they are the one with their families at home.
I look forward to understand more about the principles and the frameworks of disaster risk reduction. I look forward to explore strategies to mitigate the impact of disasters on communities and the environments. I'm currently taking my postgrad diploma on climate change. So I'm looking forward as a fresh return back to school. I'm looking forward to learn more from these participants from other regional countries and sharing what they have experienced in past disasters that they have faced in their respective countries. So I'm willing to learn more and to gain and take whatever that is important and what will be needed for the safety of our people in Tonga.
This is the first time for Tonga to host a workshop for women leadership in tsunami for the roles of women before, during and after a tsunami. The training is held in Tonga for the first time following the volcano eruption in 2022.
Thanks to Pacific Prepared reporter and senior Tonga Broadcasting Commission journalist Anasiu Falekono for that story.
Disaster is part of our life, and recovering is also part of our life.
As you see, they're smiling despite the devastation. That's how we are.
You are listening to Pacific Prepare.
When we talk about climate change, which we do on this program, obviously, I wonder, you know, what sort of things come to mind. Like, it could be things like high tides, or it could be hotter or colder weather. It could be more storms or more cyclones, more frequent cyclones. And they're all probably really relevant things as well. But, you know, I really want to think about the flow-on effects, like things that are sort of down the line more, Joe, that could also be affected, like materials that might be used for traditional practices. Like, is that something that you've seen much of, Joe?
Yes, I also noticed that, Fred. For example, in my village, you know, women in my village usually harvest there's a special leaf to weave mats from nearby the river. And these plants are usually I don't know how to term this plant in Fijian.
What's it called in Fijian?
In Fijian, it's called Huiboi.
Okay.
Huiboi. It's like a pandanus plant. They are mostly grown along the river, Singataka River. And due to the repeated flooding events in recent months, in recent years, so all these plants have been washed away.
Well, this is kind of links into the story that we're about to talk about from our reporter in Papua New Guinea. Ben Kadoga has been looking into sort of weaving and how, you know, climate change could impact that in the future.
Today, Mrs. Nagy lives in the nation's capital, Port Moresby, but she still maintains this art of making grasket.
This is our tradition, which has been passed down from generation to generation. And personally, I am sad that many women today, both young and old, do not have the passion to learn and keep this tradition alive. It also goes back to the family where we come from. If our mothers were trained to continue this work, then we would be able to pick up that skill. But this is not happening, and I am sad that the art of making Trobriand Island grass skirts will one day become extinct. We are the last ones left who have the skills and knowledge to weave these traditional grass skirts. Grass skirts form a very important part of the Trobriand Island culture. It has its place in our traditional ceremonies, dances, and different feasts. Importantly, the one to end the mourning period. These days, during feasts in both urban and back home, women tend to use manufactured materials, which is quickly replacing the traditional graskets, or what we refer to as doba in the Trobriand language. When the Westerners arrived, they came with their own traditions and beliefs, and that often clashed with our indigenous ways. This has also contributed to the fast demise of the art of making doba.
Mrs. Nagy says while it is said that this art is fast dying out, there is still hope.
It depends on an individual girl or woman. If they want to learn the art of weaving grass skirts, then those who have the knowledge and skills can easily impart these skills to them. It's an individual's choice that they need to ask me. Western influence and new technology has also attracted the attention of the young women these days, and it makes it hard for them to learn these skills because it may seem too old for them, thus they disregard the opportunities to learn. It is an individual choice that they must make, and we cannot force them to learn if they don't want to. For us, we had no choice but to learn because it was our way of life back then. Learning the art of weaving grass skirts meant surviving as a woman in the Trobriand Island cultural setting. And today, I am happy to continue on this legacy.
Weaving grass skirt is more than just making the colorful doba. It is more than that, as 54-year-old Yarana Nagy further explains.
She said the art of weaving doba or grass skirts also creates an avenue for mothers to impart good morals and values for young girls and women on how to conduct themselves in the community and also respond to certain given situations in their respective local settings. There was respect for our elders, mothers, fathers, siblings, and generally across the community. Life was simple, but it was also in order because our actions were governed by certain norms within our society. Cultures can be maintained and preserved if the younger generation paid attention and listened to the elders, their parents, and most importantly, learned the skills that will help them preserve some of our dying traditions and cultures. From my observation, I can say that sadly, these days, there is total disregard for our traditions and what we consider our way of life. Thus, we are losing these traditions that kept our societies together. As a result, we are faced with social problems and situations that we are unable to fix because we are using foreign ways and ideas to try and fix our local issues.
Thanks to Papua New Guinea freelance journalist Ben Kenoga for that story.
The time to prepare is now, not right before an emergency.
No electricity, nothing whatsoever.
You are listening to Pacific Prepared.
My name is Baptiste Flory. I'm 15 years old. I go to extramural school.
What have you lived through? Some natural disasters like cyclones, storms, that kind of thing?
Cyclones, Cyclone Gita. That was my first cyclone I experienced.
Right.
It was pretty rough.
What happened? Where were you?
I was at home, just with my mum and my dad. And then we heard the radio said that there was a cyclone, so we hurried and got some kapa, some stuff to nail against the louvers, the windows, yeah.
And you just stayed in your home the whole time?
Yeah, we just stayed at our house.
And your house was okay?
Yeah, our house was okay.
My name is Kilipia Koteo and I'm 18 years old. I go to ex-community school in Tonga. From my experience, as the years went by, like due to climate change and global warming, I did recognize that every year it becomes more disruptive and it actually destroys more homes than it did before.
Is climate change something that you think about a lot too?
Yeah. Our Pacific Islanders are the ones actually at risk. We're the ones actually facing the challenges of climate change, the rise of sea level and the hurricanes.
How does all that make you feel about living in Tonga?
I'm also concerned about the people and all of us. Every year we're always expecting a cyclone to occur and we don't know how hard it's going to hit us. And yeah, we're quite, some of us are quite scared. But for me, I'm not really scared.
My name is David Taufa. I'm 17 years old and I go to ex-community school in Tonga.
It's pretty frequent now. It's like every year we experience cyclones. So it's... For now,
sort of normal now, right?
Sort of normal, yeah. We tend not to underestimate it, but
yeah,
we do prepare ourselves. But yeah, it's kind of like a routine now every year.
Great to chat with you again this week, Joe, and get your insights from right across the Pacific and from Kiribati this week. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, friend. Thank you for having me on this show, Maori, and looking forward to more information sharing in relation to climate change next week. Cheers.
This show was made on the lands of the peoples of Stony Creek Nation in Lutruwita, Tasmania. Also the people of the Vanua Uviti. Pacific Prepared is supported with funding from the Australian Government's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Any views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the Australian Government. It's produced and distributed in partnership with Radio Australia and networks across the Pacific, including Radio New Zealand Pacific, National Broadcasting Corporation of Papua New Guinea, Palau Wave Radio, Fijian Broadcasting Corporation, Samoa National Radio 2AP, Solomon Islands Broadcasting Corporation, and Tonga Broadcasting Commission. My name's Fred Hooper, and thanks to my co-host in Fiji, Josina Nunga. Please share any information you've learned today. And stay safe. This has been Pacific Prepared.